All right, it looks like we've got a full house this morning, so we will go ahead and get started. The time is now 9:31 a.m. on October 25th, 2024, and I call the meeting on the Committee on Behavior Analysts to order. This meeting is video hosted using Zoom. The public and parties on this agenda have been notified of this fact and have been supplied with meeting access. Ms. Malice, would you please call roll? I
Madam
think
Chair,
she's
I'll go
gone.
with her. Do you hear me okay?
Oh, there you go. We hear you.
Okay, thank you. Yes, Dr. Byra?
Present.
Dr. Daisy?
Present.
Ms. Denton?
Present.
Dr. Raitt?
Present.
And Dr. Stenhouse?
Present.
We have a quorum.
Thank you, Ms. Malice. We will move on to agenda item number three, which is general committee remarks, announcements, and updates. I think it's important to note that we appreciate the public who are here, the stakeholders who are involved. As you will see in today's meeting, if you have not attended in the past, it is incredibly helpful to have those who are on the agenda present. Even if you're not on the agenda, coming to these meetings can help prepare you for future meetings. I know that there are some professors at some local universities who require their students to attend for some of these meetings to try and educate and provide individuals with the knowledge to better prepare themselves to practice in the state of Arizona. So thank you to those who are in attendance today. In addition, we cannot go a single meeting without acknowledging board staff. Board staff work very hard to prepare for these meetings, whether it is gathering materials for the committee to review for complaints, to adjudicate those complaints, to ensure there is public protection of those receiving behavior analytic services, as well as supporting the licensees in ensuring that they are practicing appropriately within the state of Arizona. Board staff also prepare the licensee applicants, and getting all of their documentation. Ms. Malice is instrumental in ensuring that we receive, as a committee, the documentation that is needed to do the substantive review process. So thank you, board staff. I will say it every single time we meet. Everybody needs to know how hard you work, and we appreciate you. Another general comment here is along those lines of education. For those who are in attendance, if you're already a BCBA and you are applying for your license, the Board of Psychologist Examiners is an approved BACB by the BACB as an ACE continuing education provider. Attending a meeting of the Board's Committee on Behavior Analysts, like this one, is eligible for continuing education credit for both maintenance of the BACB certification as well as for Arizona licensure renewal. In order to claim credit for this meeting, make note of the code words that will be provided hourly by board staff. To report code words to board staff for the purpose of earning continuing education credit, look for the link on the board's meeting page for this particular meeting. Board staff will verify licensees earned credits for attending this meeting in their CE broker accounts. Licensees will be able to view the entered and verified credit within 2 to 3 weeks of this meeting. We will move on now to agenda item number four. Agenda item number four is the approval of minutes. We have September 27th, 2024 regular session minutes, as well as September 27th, 2024 executive session minutes. I am recused from these minutes. Are there any other recusals from these minutes before we move forward?
Yes, Madam Chair, I am also recused.
Okay. Well, those remaining committee members who were not recused from this matter, is there a motion for the September 27th regular and executive session minutes since we have no further recusals?
So moved.
Okay, is there a second?
I'll second.
Okay. The motion has been made by Dr. Stenhoff to approve both the regular and executive session minutes from September 27th, 2024. It has been seconded by Dr. Davey. Is there any discussion? All in favor, say aye.
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 All opposed, nay. The motion carries.
Sorry, I couldn't unmute myself. I said aye, just so you know.
Okay, wonderful.
I'm working on it. Technical difficulties this morning. I'm gonna get there. I'm gonna get there, I promise.
Okay. Well, we will just move right along to agenda item number five. Agenda item number five has two different items underneath it. As we move into agenda item number five, this is discussion, consideration, and possible action regarding recommendations to the board for the following matters. We will begin with agenda item number 5A, which is complaint number 24-40 against Jennifer Huffman, and her pending renewal application. We will handle the complaint first, and then move into determining the renewal application, following the decisions that are made after the complaint review. Before we start this complaint review, are there any disclosures or recusals? Seeing none, I will share some important information for those participating today. I will review this information at this point, but it will also apply to agenda item number 5B. Please note that a person or a representative of a person who has filed or is the subject of a complaint and is present today may make a brief statement, which is up to 5 minutes, to the committee when prompted by me. The committee may have questions for the complainant or the respondent after their statements. Only individuals directly involved in the complaint, which are the complainant and respondent, and their legal representatives may address the committee and make a statement. If the committee wishes to hear from any other party, it will make this request during the case review. For everyone in attendance today, please ensure that your audio remains muted. When prompted by the committee to speak, the complainant, respondents, and their legal representative may unmute themselves at that time. Please note that individuals in attendance who speak out without committee approval will be warned twice by the chair not to interrupt. If the interruption continues after the second warning, the individual will be removed from the Zoom meeting and will not be permitted to re-enter the meeting. Please only use initials for patients or children and the complainant. Be aware that the content of many records involved in these complaints is confidential and the content should not be discussed in a public meeting. The committee may go into executive session to discuss any confidential records or to receive confidential legal advice from the board's attorney, Jean Galvin. At this time, I will move forward and ask the lead on this case, Dr. Stenhoff, to provide an overview of this complaint.
All right. Thank you, Madam Chair. So the complainant SS was an RBT from 2023 to 2024 at the clinical one of the clinical locations of the agency in which the licensee, Ms. Huffman, is employed. SS filed the complaint after leaving the agency. SS alleges that Ms. Huffman was unable to effectively oversee client services and the staff who served those clients. She alleged that programs continued to be run well after mastery. She also alleged that the client sessions were interrupted with team huddles and meetings with the owner. While client sessions were interrupted, they were still being billed for the entire time. One of the clients, JS, should have been referred for other services due to the escalating behaviors, including aggression and hallucinations. JS's treatment was inappropriate, and then it did not address the main antecedents. SS also reported an inappropriate comment made by another BT and that Ms. Huffman did not address that comment. Ms. Huffman is the only BCBA working for the agency and works in two different locations. Ms. Huffman's responded that she is not the owner of the agency. She works primarily at the Mesa location, but is at the Lakeside location at least one time per month, and also meets with other staff at that location. SS was only AY's staff for three clients, or excuse me, AY, SS's only client was AY. Further, SS only worked once per week. Regarding the individual clients, JS was not SS's client, and Ms. Huffman worked with JS for 4 years. AY was a client of SS. SS noted discomfort after AY ate meals. When discussed with AY's mother, her mother was not concerned. DS was not a client of SS. Regarding the inappropriate statement by the BT, Ms. Huffman addressed the comment after the session. Ms. Huffman was also concerned that SS knew what happens at the agency after her departure. This ends my review. I'm happy to answer any questions from the committee.
Do committee members have any questions for Dr. Stenhoff? Okay, seeing none, we will move down. Do we know if the complainant SS is present? If so, you may unmute yourself at this time. State your initials only for the record, and this is your opportunity to make a brief statement up to 5 minutes to the committee. If SS is present, the committee may have questions following the statement.
Present.
Okay, if that was SS, if you will state your initials for the record.
My initials are SS.
Excellent. You may now make a statement, if you wish, up to 5 minutes to the committee. Keep in mind, we have reviewed everything that you have supplied, but if you feel there is some information that you would like to present, this is your opportunity.
I feel like as I was working there, that the BCBA in question was not able to give effective services for the clients. Several things were overlooked that should have been addressed, such as JS's behavior. It was directly reported to me from the manager that the only reason why she was there was because she was the highest billing client. And if she wasn't there, that the company would close. I felt like many of the things that this client was struggling with were out of the BCBA scope of practice. Also, the other client, there was another client there. I don't have his initials, but there was not assent given from the client for speech interventions that were given, and there was no collaboration with that client's speech therapist. When questioned, the BCBA didn't even know who the speech therapist was and said she did not have permission to talk to them just because they had changed over the course of several months. Skills were kept on mastery for quite an extended period of time. In the clinic, there was much stronger evidence. There was much stronger concern over how many trial counts were given per hour by the RBTs rather than the quality of services that were given. There were issues with the company for a insurance inspection, and they were modifying the session notes, copying, pasting the RBT's signatures and putting them on the new modified session notes. Things were being billed inappropriately. Those are my updates.
Okay, thank you very much. Committee members, are there questions for the complainant SS?
Madam Chair, I've got a couple.
Go forward, Dr. Stenhoff.
All right. So SS, are you currently under the supervision of an RBT this time? Or excuse me, under the supervision of a BCBA. I realize you're an RBT, sorry.
I am, yes.
Okay. And then did you confer with your current supervisor regarding this complaint?
When I placed the complaint, no. But since then, I have discussed it with her.
Okay. Okay. And then I just wanted to have a couple of clarifying questions as well. One has to do with treatment. You indicated in the complaint about the main antecedents leading the client's behavior weren't being addressed. What do you mean by the main antecedents? What is that referring to?
So the client, JS, had difficulty with antecedents, such as if an RBT was licking their lips or if they made a certain sound with their mouth. And the client would say, "Would you stop saying?" Much of the time, the RBT made no noises with their mouth, but they just started saying, "Okay, I'll try," or "I'm not doing that." But this was often a precursor for this particular client to go into behavior. This client did have some extreme behaviors, which resulted in multiple RBTs being hurt. Multiple people, including myself, had to have, I was in physical therapy for about 10 weeks and went to a chiropractor for 10 weeks because of whiplash. Another one had something wrong with her shoulder, bruises. The owner said it was always the RBT's fault that something had happened. And people were getting hurt. And when I addressed the BCBA about if there was a functional analysis that was going to be done or, you know, what was being over, it's over the course of, you know, 4 or 5 months, there was nothing. It was just keeping the peace with this client so that she wouldn't have to address it. But the whole point of having this behavioral intervention is to help clients work through things, especially as they get older and as they are harming others. This behavior was not addressed. Everything was just a band-aid, keep the peace. People were getting hurt, and it was not appropriate therapy intervention.
Thank you. And then as far as the physical therapy that you were involved with, was a incident report filed with the company at that point? Madam Chair, can you have FCB, wait a minute so we can have a discussion about this? Thank you, FCB. Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, FCB. So was an incident report filed with the company?
Yes, it was filed.
Okay. All right. And then some further questions. As far as the, excuse me, my photocopying or copying and pasting RBT signatures, how were you made aware of that?
I watched it happen in the clinic.
Okay.
I'd like to ask a follow-up question to that, and I'm not certain if I missed this information, but was it the respondent that you observed copying and pasting the RBT signatures?
No, it was not. It was the administrative staff.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And then in regard to that, did the agency pay for the whiplash or the physical therapy treatment for that?
Yes, it was covered under workers' comp.
Okay. All right. And then Dr. Davey, do you have questions in line with that? I've got a couple more questions, but
please continue. I've got my questions are a little different.
Okay. And then you also indicated that some of the targets were consistently in mastered status. However, they continue to run those for several months. Could you just provide an example of that?
Sure. So, for example, if We would have clients that would have phrases of speech like, what does it mean if someone says it's raining cats and dogs? Then the client would give a rote answer. And then they would have several phrases of speech, but this 10-year-old client would be going over this for months, and it was pointless, really. And similar things for DTT with, you know, identifying things such as community helpers, but they would just be run consistently.
Okay. All right. Thank you. And then I just have one more question at this time, but you indicated also in your complaint about huddle meetings. What was the purpose or the function of the huddle meetings during time working with clients?
So we would have short huddles. Those aren't the ones that I was concerned about. There would be other times when a staff member would be pulled to talk to, say, the owner of the company, and they might be gone for an hour and a half. Meanwhile, their client would be with another RBT. So the second RBT now has two clients, but they are still being billed as though it's one-on-one services.
Okay.
So that is something that would happen.
Okay, so the huddle meetings were not related to the therapy of the client that you were currently working with.
So we would have huddle meetings where the whole group would come together and they would address things such as properly putting in session notes. They were related to directly to the services, but those were generally brief, less than 10 minutes, I would say.
Okay, but was it feedback related to that, or just how to, and I guess in the way you responded, the feedback also had to do with the way that notes were being done, but was it directly related to the treatment or the program for the clients?
I would say the short huddles, generally, yes.
Okay. I don't have any further questions, Madam Chair, but I'd like to reserve the opportunity if I have further to ask them.
I did have a question that kind of goes back to the question before the huddle meetings. When you talk about the goals that were in mastery and they were going on and on and on, and you were the direct staff on this case as well as a behavior analysis trainee at this time, is this something that you had a discussion with the respondent about?
It is. So the way that the clinic was, we had the main BCBA, then we had two behavior analytic trainees. I was only there part-time. We were not able to give enough time giving our staffing to effectively run program modifications. So I would have, you know, an hour with one client once a week to look at their programs and make modifications. But with so many clients, there was only so much I could personally do. The other behavior analytic trainee was only doing that part time as she was a teacher the other 20 hours of the week. I felt like we just did not have the staffing to effectively address everything, especially given the BCBA way was over two clinics, and we consistently had staffing concerns at the Lakeshore office. There just wasn't proper training implementation. There wasn't enough oversight. It was just kind of, they've used the words, getting warm bodies in there, which also was not effective ABA. But there was a lot of difficulty, but I did address it with the BCBA, and it was just kind of, well, do these as often as you can, which I did, but she was aware of it.
Dr. Byra, is this in line with the same questioning? Okay.
So first, SS, thank you for coming today. I know not all the time complainants are able to come, so I just wanted to first thank you for coming and answering our questions. So along that line, when you said, you know, you only had an hour to kind of really work on program modification, when you were there as a trainee, were you acting as a kind of a case manager for some of these clients, or were you only doing direct care, like 97153, or were you doing some additional codes with modifiers under the respondent? Can you explain to me a little bit more about your role there?
Sure. So I was assigned by the BCBA to primarily have one client that I oversaw, quote unquote, as a BCBA. But I did run other BCBA duties, such as helping with training with the RBTs in clinic, doing the program modifications, both for those in the clinic I was at, as well as doing telehealth appointments for the satellite office. So that was all overseen by the BCBA. I did make sure that I always followed up post every meeting to review whatever program modifications I made and any training opportunities that I had with RBTs.
Okay. Thank you for clarifying that. Thank you, Madam Chair.
And the one client that you had as a behavior analytic trainee was JS.
No, that one was not.
Okay.
That was another clinic. That was another client that I did occasionally work on for one-on-one therapy, as well as I did some program modifications for her while another RBT assisted her.
Okay. Dr. Davey, it appears it might be time for your questions.
Thanks. And then just SS, again, Dr. Byers said, thank you for being here. It's very helpful for us to ask questions. And then also just, I noticed when you were trying to think about the physical therapy comment, is there someone else in the room with you right now, just for the record, as you're talking to us?
I do have my current BCBA with me in the room.
Thank you. So a couple of questions for you. The first question I have is, can you just clarify for me how long Ms. Huffman was your supervisor and during what periods?
Sure. I began working as an RBT at the clinic of April of 2022. The following August of 2023. Sorry, April of 2023. And then that August of 2023, I entered the graduate program to become a BCBA, and that's when I transitioned over to become a BAT.
Okay, thank you.
And then I left the company in May
of
this year.
And prior to you leaving in May, you know, I note that you list off at least three in your complaint. There's at least three different clients that you bring concerns about. Prior to departure in May, had you discussed with Ms. Huffman any of the concerns related to client JS or there are two other clients, DS, and I believe one more.
Who's AY.
Student? AY. What were the conversations about those particular clients with your supervisor?
I did address them as they came up. As mentioned earlier with JS, I did talk to her about the things that I was concerned about. And it was kind of a, oh, well, yeah, we could try that. I'll show you how it works. But it was more so just, I'm just trying to keep the peace kind of instead of working through these things.
So, I mean, you make the statement that you had a client, in particular JS, that's hallucinating. So you're saying that does not come out in supervision and is not discussed by you and your supervisor at that point?
That was directly addressed when it was happening. It was around the holidays. At the time, the BCBA was simply tracking it. I addressed it that it was out of our scope of practice, and I asked that she talk to the parents about it. And then she wasn't able to get in with the parents. There were some scheduling conflicts with the parents. But then also the parents stated, yeah, we'll try to get her in for an evaluation. And then it was, they can't get her in for evaluation. And yeah, but it was absolutely addressed at the time.
And how was that information conveyed back and forth between your supervisor and yourself?
It was in person at the clinic.
So as part of your supervision experience, as part of just touch bases, as part of just, hey, I'm here on site and let's follow up on things. Like I'm trying to square up the conversations you're having with the statements where you're saying there's no oversight. And so I'm just trying to kind of square those things up. Can you help me understand that?
Well, whenever I was working with the BCBA on site, that was considered supervision time. So I did not have outside conversations outside of the clinic with her. It was always in person, directly talking about the clients.
So are you saying?
Could I interject for just a second? So did any of these conversations happen outside of the time that you were providing, that 97153? Like, did you have unrestricted time as well?
I guess I'm not understanding. I'm not familiar with the billing codes right now. I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. I'm looking to see here if there might be documentation of these conversations in a supervision note that your supervisor would have completed, perhaps outside of just the direct oversight they provided you while you were working one-on-one with the client.
There are no supervision notes, as far as I know, that I have seen. Nothing would be in writing. It would all just be conversation.
Well, Madam Chair, I think that's probably a question we should ask the licensee, because that would be a different code. And I don't believe that the RBT would be most likely aware or unaware of whether or not that is occurring simultaneously under a 97155 protocol modification. If you don't mind. Am I okay to proceed, Madam Chair?
Yes.
Thank you. So there are conversations going on. You're not aware whether or not they're being captured in writing before or after the fact by your BCBA, but there is a in particular, I'm concerned about extreme aggression, right? I'm concerned about hallucinations. So what I'm hearing you say, those are not brushed off. They are talked about. There is some communication back and forth between you and the BCBA that they're trying to work with the parents. And this goes on for some period of time. Is that fair?
Yes, there are conversations, but nothing would come to fruition. There was no action based off of the conversations.
To your knowledge, correct?
Correct.
Okay. Continue, Dr. Beyer, if it's something you want to jump in on that is along this line of questions,
yeah. Feel free. I just wanted to clarify, are we only having these conversations when you're actively with a client? Like, is the client always present when we're discussing this? Are we having separate time away in the clinic, you know, sitting down, closed door, being able to do this, or is it only when you're already with that client doing direct service?
These conversations never happened in front of that client or any clients. It was always in the office when it was just me and her or other appropriate administrative staff.
Thanks.
I'd like to follow up with that real quick. Did you consider this supervision for the purpose of tracking your supervision hours for certification?
Yes.
Okay. A couple of other statements that you put in your complaint that I want to explore. The comment around this client's not going to be released, in particular the clients, again, going back to JS, because they essentially were billing a lot of dollars for this individual. Where does this conversation come from? Can you provide a little bit more context as to why you included this statement in here?
Yes. So the main purpose of having ABA intervention is to help the client to improve, not to have somebody collect a paycheck. In October or November, I believe, we lost about 3/4 of our clients and staff because we lost the ability to accept clients from one particular insurance company. And so there's a big stressor on the company for financial reasons. The holidays happened. This is when this particular client, JS, started having much more severe behavior issues, including the hallucination, and having these conversations with the owner, he flat out told me she is our highest billing client. And if we lose her, then we will have to close the company. And to me, that was just wrong. That's not why we do ABA.
And so are you aware of billing rates? Are you aware of how many hours other particular clients are getting in your facilities? Are you aware of which contracts this company holds, does not hold? Or is this strictly just a one-off conversation?
Well, I do know that she was the only Blue Cross Blue Shield client, and I believe they do have the highest rates for what we were accepting.
With regard to ongoing training, And again, I'm just kind of working through your complaint and things I've flagged in it. So obviously you were at this particular point, an RBT, you're under supervision. When you talk about the training around safety care, are you specifically talking about some additional training that is very much general in terms of how to handle a crisis? Or are you talking more about the fact that you received no training in how to handle a crisis plan that was included in somebody's treatment plan?
Sure. When prior to us losing the bulk of our staff and clients in October or November, we did have a lead RBT that received training to train the other staff in safety care. When he was let go from the company, in anger, he shredded all of the documents stating that he had started training for safety care and also did not upload anything into the platform. So nobody had completed any actual safety care training, doing holds, nothing for CPI. I was previously certified with another company. So at the time I was the only one, actually able to do it through a proper certification. We had a quote unquote breakout room that had padded doors or walls that we were instructed to carry or transport these clients to, that they would calm down in. And, you know, they have big behaviors and sometimes we had to grab them in ways that were not safe. We did not have the staff did not have proper training on how to protect themselves or the clients properly. And kind of a tangent off of this, one of our clients is at a new location that I work. And the first day after the client came here, I was following up with the client's mother of how this client was doing. And she said he came home beaming, saying this was the first time he went somewhere where he was not abused. This 9 or 10 year old client felt like he was abused at this location. This mother told me she never knew that there was a quote unquote breakout room. She was never informed or gave permission for her son to be in holds. She was not informed. And I was told this in August here.
So let's go back a little bit to the training around crisis plans, right? So if you are being instructed by your supervisor or by staff to physically move a child from one location to another, was there training involved in that and how to physically manage a child for transportation?
No, there was not.
To your knowledge, was there a behavior intervention plan / crisis plan developed that was that included such a procedure?
The BIPs that we had were more so for tracking, with given specific things to do as far as if it's antecedent, if this behavior happens, then this is what the consequence is going to be. So it was consistent among the behavior technicians. It would include things such as if this happens, relocate the client, but it was never make sure there's two, that you're holding them appropriately. As far as I recall, and it's been several months, there was nothing specific into that as far as safety training.
Did you ever see individuals' behavior intervention plans? Like, were they printed out? Like, did you have a protocol book for any of the other programs you were running?
The platform that we used was Skills, and the BIPs were uploaded into Skills that all technicians had free access to.
Okay, thank you. Continuing down, just some discussion, some things in your report, you make a statement that is just somewhat concerning to me that that I want you to elaborate on. And it's the part where you talk about you've left the company and 6 weeks later, you understand that there has been still no attempt to be able to assist a particular client with SLP services and client communication goals. Tell me a little bit about this situation.
So it was, I did that program modification with a client, and before I left, it was 6 weeks prior to the first program modification when I had asked the BCBA about the SLP intervention. It was before I had left the company. So I had asked the BCBA about things before I had left, and she said, no, there hasn't been anything new. So it wasn't any new information I was getting after I had left the company.
So this is why you're still employed?
Correct, yes.
Okay, that information shared with you?
Yes.
Thank you for clarifying that. I appreciate you answering the questions. Oh, I had just one other thing. On those three clients, how many of those clients, the three that you mentioned in your complaint, how many of those clients were actually, were you providing services to?
So that old, I had direct, let's see. So I would provide direct service to two of those clients, either one-on-one sessions or overseeing a program modification while other RBTs did it. The one client, I was doing supervision while the BCBA did a program modification via telehealth, and I was watching her do it. So that was not my direct client, but I was super, I was involved in one of the meetings for that client.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, SS.
Are there further questions from committee members for the complainant? I do want to, before we move on, FCB, I did see that you wanted to make a comment earlier. I am going to allow us to receive our statement from the licensee to go through some questioning, and if there is still some additional information that the committee would benefit from hearing from you, we will circle back around to you. Okay. We now have the opportunity for the respondent and or their legal representation to make a brief statement up to 5 minutes. You may now unmute yourself at this time and state your full name for the record.
Yes, good morning, Madam Chair, members of the board. Attorney Mandy Carvis appearing with and on behalf of Ms. Huffman, who is also present. I will be making a brief statement for the board today, and should the board members have questions for Ms. Huffman, she's happy to address them. I know that the board received...
Can we have Ms. Huffman state her full name for the record before you continue with your statement?
Sure.
Hi, I am Jennifer Huffman, and I am here to respond to this complaint.
Thank you.
Wonderful. Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the board. I know that you reviewed a lot of voluminous information here because obviously the three clients that are at issue are generally receiving daily services at the Learning Center. So I know that you had a lot of information to go through. So we appreciate you taking the time to do that. We believe it's important for the members of the committee to consider the source of this complaint, i.e. that it is being filed by a former employee who was essentially a very part-time employee for a short period of time. She is raising concerns or questions about clients that she was not even directly involved in, which means that she would have had to intentionally access these people's records and get information for clients that she shouldn't have had access to, that she intentionally went and sought this information out. Many of the things that she said today were new or different than the things that were submitted in the prior complaint. I think it's important to note that she, while she filed the complaint against Ms. Huffman, many of the things that she was complaining about upon clarification from the board, she was saying it wasn't Ms. Huffman who said that or did that or things of that nature. It seems like she has a frustration with her former employer for some reason, and the manner in which she chose to take that out was filing a complaint against Ms. Huffman. We addressed the issues with respect to these individual clients in the response, so I know that you have read that, so I'm not going to go down into that. Ms. Huffman will tell you if you're inclined to ask her about that, how she supervises the RBTs at both locations, what she does to make sure that they're adequately supervised, that clients are adequately receiving services. She does a lot of things to ensure that, you know, despite working primarily at one location, that those at the other locations receive supervision and assistance as needed. There are, in fact, huddle meetings, but as we indicated in our response, those typically last 7 to 10 minutes. They're not hours long sessions, as have been alleged. And again, most of these complaints that are raised, one, are baseless, and two, not in fact. Ms. Huffman takes her role in this company very seriously, and her duties and obligations to supervise very seriously. We believe that all of that was done reasonably and appropriately and in conformance with the ethical rules that guide the practice. And again, we believe that this is simply a complaint from a disgruntled former employee that for whatever reason chose to take this out on Ms. Huffman. She was quite surprised when she received this complaint because as this person was leaving, she was very kind to Ms. Huffman and thanked her for her help and training and assistance. So she's kind of confused as to how she became the target here. But Ms. Huffman is a dedicated professional and works with everyone who is providing services to ensure that these children are receiving the services that they need. Again, she is happy to answer any questions that you may have about her supervision of this person, of RBTs in general, or just the general provision of services. And we believe that this complaint should be recommended for dismissal before the full board. But again, Ms. Huffman is happy to address any questions that members of the board may have for her today. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Carvis. Do committee members have questions for Ms. Carvis or Ms. Huffman at this time? Dr. Byra?
Thanks, Madam Chair. Just to get kind of a lay of the land, I know there's two different sites, but if we could get just kind of a, you know, 30,000 foot view of how many clients you're overseeing at both sites, you know, ballpark, I know it's kind of challenging, but ballpark, how many direct service hours are they getting weekly? And I guess kind of what your structure is, if you're the only VCBA, is there more candidates now? Or I guess maybe, sorry, I'll revise that. I don't care about candidates now, actually. If you could talk about when the complaint occurred. I know SS mentioned she was there. There was another part-timer. If you can kind of give me an overview of your structure, that would be helpful.
Absolutely. So I have, across both of the two sites, I have about 14 clients, and they receive anywhere from 15 to, I have like one that has 40 hours a week, but overall, most of them are between 15 to 25 hours per week on average. All of my staff at my Lakeside site right now are RBT certified and in good standing. And receive all of the supervision required for them to maintain all of that. The vast majority of my staff at my Mesa site are also RBT certified, as we require that they do the training and expect them to become certified within 90 days of employment. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, for now. Thanks. Okay. Thanks, Madam Chair.
Absolutely.
Dr. Stenhoff.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So Ms. Huffman, what could you characterize your administrative duties? I'm more specifically referring to the operations of the business. You know, I know you oversee the clients and you also oversee the RBTs. But yeah, to what extent or in what ways do you assist in the operations of the business, from billing practices to training and so on?
So I do a lot of training through the supervision that I do. I also provide trainings to our staff through utilizing Relias and with doing one-on-one trainings or group trainings with them. We have a biller that is specifically for our company, so I don't do a lot of the billing side of things. What I can speak to is that I know my codes, I know how to appropriately allocate them and utilize them in a way that is appropriate and ethical. As far as time manners, I have gone to our owner before and said, hey, you know, we had a really hard time with this today, and because of this and this, we are not able to bill for this specific time frame because it does not meet billable requirements based off of some emergency thing that may have happened. So just being very cognizant and aware of those things that are happening, but I am not involved in the billing itself.
Okay. Thank you. That's helpful. Next question I have, there is some concern in the complaint regarding safety care training or behavior management training. Let's just refer to it that as perhaps. But mm-hmm. could you describe how your staff are prepared to deal with more intensive behaviors such as aggression?
Yes. So a lot of our staff did already come in, as SS did, with CPI training under their belt. But we also did, as she had stated, we provided safety care training. Now, the unfortunate part of that is they received the training, or the vast majority of them received the training, but were never able to be certified in that because of the shredding of the documents. As she stated in her thing. I also try to, whenever I have a new behavior plan, I will either bring it up in a group meeting and go through and train how to utilize this behavior plan with a particular client, or I will go through and I will make sure that I sit down in supervision sessions with the clients and the staff and go over how to utilize that with that client.
Dr. Byra?
It's in alignment with that, Dr. Senhoff. So I didn't mean to cut you off. You can have the floor back in a moment. I know there was the issue that no one was technically certified because of the documents, but do you remember around the timeline about when, had the documents been entered into the portal, that they would have been certified?
I don't remember the exact time with that, no.
Okay. That's okay. I'm asking because in JS's case file, there is indeed a behavior plan that's been signed on March 6, 2022. And mm-hmm. it does have physical restraint as listed as one of the potential consequence strategies. So I'm wondering if one, you know, during that time, were all the staff that were working with that client having some kind of crisis management, CPI, safety care, PMC certification sorted?
Yes.
Back
yes,
in 2022.
Yes, they would have. Because prior to all of this happening, prior to SS working at this location, we also had another trainer that had trained all of our staff in safety care at that time.
Okay.
And they were all certified and in the portal and everything.
Okay. Thank you.
Dr. Stenhoff, do you mind if I ask another question in that line?
No, and actually, Madam Chair, I don't have any further questions at this point, so. Okay.
We'll kind of stick with JS for at this point, but I think it would also extend to other clients at your facilities, at your different locations. Do you receive funding by either of the DDD healthcare plans? For any of your clients?
Not currently, no.
I had a few questions if other committee members aren't raising their hands at the moment. When I was reviewing the documentation, and thank you so much for supplying everything that you supplied. I
I'm not sure about anyone else, but I'm losing Miss Denton.
Yeah, I was going to say, I that cut out.
Oh. You're frozen on the screen, Miss Denton, and your voice is very chopped up.
She's completely frozen now.
Yep.
No, she's
and gone. Maybe left.
Ms. Packer and Ms. Michelson.
Yes, I was community members. I apologize. I too have unstable internet, so I shut off my camera. I'm watching for Ms. Denton to text message me. It looks like she is returning, though.
Is it better? Am I frozen? Can you hear me?
We can hear you.
Okay. Can I just hop back in? Okay. Sorry about that. So what I was saying is, you know, you supplied a little bit of information about mm-hmm. the supervision that you provided to SS as a behavior mm-hmm. analysis trainee outside mm-hmm. of the RBT supervision that you were providing specifically on the case.
Mm-hmm.
I saw that there was a supervision contract, so mm-hmm. the dates that supervision occurred there. The complainant SS has stated that there were supervision meetings that were happening outside of the direct implementation time that you were overseeing whenever mm-hmm. one-on-one services were being delivered in, like, those restricted settings.
Yes.
Do you have supervision documentation of those unrestricted meetings that would document when your supervisee was bringing to you concerns about the cases and that what your recommendations were?
I believe that I have paper documentation because I take a lot of notes. I don't have it electronically.
That one. So when you were having the, like, these huddle meetings,
mm-hmm.
would the complainant SS have ever been exposed to information about other cases that she was not assigned to?
No.
And there was something that was mentioned about a loss of a funder. Did the loss of the funder come as a result of clinical practices?
No.
Those are the questions that I had. Do any other committee members have questions? Dr. Davey.
Sorry, Dr. Byra. I feel like we're Family Feud. Like, if it's mine's a different line of questioning. So if you want to continue.
It's two. So no, go ahead.
Okay. I thank you so much again for being here. I know that this is stressful to have to work through and really I'm trying to, in terms of the length, first off, how long did you know the complainant, in a professional capacity?
Just for the time that she was working with us.
And that was over 2 years? Over 2 years?
I think it's about a year and a half.
Year and a half. And yeah. You supervised her that entire time?
I supervised her once she got her RBT supervision, mm-hmm. And then also as a behavior analytic trainee.
Yes. Very good. And during your time working with, during that period of time, the year and a half she was with the company, the year or so she was with you while you were supervising her, describe to me the relationship you had with SS. Was it, talk to us a little bit about the relationship you built as supervisor and someone you were mentoring.
So I tried to, as with all of my supervisees, build a good rapport to be able to discuss hard issues, to give feedback, to be able to build a relationship where we were able to discuss things and have hard conversations, because there are a lot of hard conversations that you need to have as you're learning. But also to be able to teach and help her grow by both having her do things and giving her feedback, as well as modeling those things for her.
And at any time, was there any discussion that she was unhappy with things that were going on, either one, through your supervision, two, with particular clients? You kind of make the statement in your rebuttal to this that this is all new to you, that you were unaware that this was such a there was such problems going on, and I'd like you just to elaborate on that.
Yeah, so there were questions that she would ask me that I expected were just part of the learning experience, right? Lots of questions about, like, how does this work? How do we do this? What about this? But I never saw it as her bringing concerns to me as far as, this is a big problem. Like, I have a really big problem with this, or, you know, I'm concerned about the ethics behind this. If I had felt that there was a way that she was coming at me like that, would not have been so shocked when this happened, because there always seemed to be a good rapport between us during that time, and very much like a, okay, let's ask questions to learn from them rather than I have a problem.
Can you think back to some of the discussions you had, and particularly with the first clients, JS, with regard to the hallucinations and the behavior problems? Can you give us just like a, 3-minute summary on that particular case and some of the finer points related to that?
So I have worked with JS and her family for several years. I have a very good rapport with her family. I have spoken with them and communicated with them very clearly about everything that has gone on. They have taken her to get evaluations as I had requested. And the data that I was taking during that time was related to helping with diagnosis of a potential comorbid diagnosis to help her family and work with a psychiatrist who I was also speaking with and had a release of information to speak to regarding these behaviors. I believe that some of the concerns that SS has are related to maybe not quite understanding the approach that I was taking with this client. And that because of only being there 1 to 2 days a week throughout her employment, she wasn't seeing the whole picture of everything that was being done. We did a lot of working with her on how to communicate emotions, how to effectively communicate when she's frustrated, and being able to advocate for herself through that frustration to be able to work through some of these things.
Thank you. I have no other questions at this time. Thank you.
Dr. Byra.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I wanted to pull the thread on JS a little bit more, because I did see in the documentation, there was a lot, and I know we had some issues with some of the file share. So if I missed something, please let me know. But I did see that there was an evaluation done on 1/31/24, and there's a reevaluation. But there was a recommendation to follow up with a psychiatrist. So it looks like that was not, a psychiatrist that did that evaluation. So did that follow up occur? Because that wasn't in any of the file notes.
I made recommendations to the family that they do that. But they have not done that yet. I do personally have a background with dealing with some of these things. So I've been trying to work with them to help them accept that there may be some difficult things going on with their child, to be able to help her. I am actually getting ready to speak to them and let them know that if there is not some type of way that they're able to get this evaluated, that we will no longer be able to engage in serving this client because of the severity of some of the behaviors that have just recently started. Not right. ones that have been going on for a long period of time, but it's something that I have constant communication with her mom and dad multiple times a week on, you know, things that are going on and things that have happened and things that have changed and things have been going very well. I've been able to discontinue two of the behaviors that we are tracking for this client because she has been making significant progress. But over the last week or two, we have started to see some really big problems. And I am getting ready to either refer to the parents that some type of other place needs to be found, or that we need to find a solution to help to manage some of these things.
Okay. When you say you have experience with these things, do you mean you have experience treating comorbid conditions? You have experience diagnostics? Okay. I just wanted to get some clarity about that.
I have a background working with severe mental health prior to working in this profession.
Okay. I'm kind of doing a 30,000 foot view of kind of her, you know, we got all the documentation. So, you know, looking at other behaviors that you were targeting, could you kind of walk me through the process? Because all I see, because again, I looked at the file, but I realized there may be things missing. So I do see that you're using the CARD informant, like the informant kind of functional assessment there. Can you kind of walk me through the process? That's the only documentation that I saw kind of in terms of behavior plan development. So can you kind of walk me through that?
Yeah. So I've also done an ISCA with her as far as trying to work on practical functional assessment and skill-based treatment. I'm sorry if you could not find that in the documentation. But I have been working with her family on that and implementing SBT with her as well.
Okay. Yeah, because the only documentation, and this is dating back to November of 2022. And so again, if there's stuff missing, but yeah, so it looks like for most of the problem behaviors that we have just the informant assessment, then there seems to be kind of a brief behavior plan. And then there's like a short write-up for a few of them. And then in your notation, you said you reevaluate every 6 months. Mm-hmm. I know sometimes people say we reevaluate 6 months because that's what funders say, you know, we're going to do like a formal plan.
Right.
But I guess what is your policy about kind of revisiting challenging behavior graphs and making adjustments and things like that?
So I try and look at those graphs probably about on a weekly basis whenever I'm doing protocol modification. And if I see that there are significant changes, or if I see that the RBTs are coming to me and saying, hey, this new thing is happening, and I'm looking at the ABC data and I see it in there, I will make modifications as needed beyond those times. It just, that is, you know, when I would check it for those authorization time periods.
Okay. That's all I have for now, especially for JS. Thanks, Madam Chair.
I just want to go back, just so I understand one thing, and I'm sorry that I'm kind of rehashing something I already asked, but I want to know, like, from your point, Ms. Huffman, was there any daylight between you and SS in terms of your supervision to her and her behavior analytic training? Did she ever bring any concerns to you of like, hey, you're not giving me enough. Hey, I don't feel like I'm doing a good job because I'm lacking training. Like in any of your one-on-one sessions, was this ever any of the conversation?
No.
And you say you were surprised that this complaint came forward.
Mm-hmm.
And tell me why you're surprised.
I was surprised because of just when we left, we were on good terms from what I could understand. And SS seems like she was appreciative of everything and told me she was appreciative of everything that I had taught her and everything that I had done for her during that time. And so to go from, hey, I really appreciate this to I don't like this and I'm going to make a complaint. It was shocking to me.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
I think I'm going to come back to the behavior analysis trainee supervision piece.
Yes.
You know, when we look at the BACB's guidance on documentation of these sessions that are occurring, you know, for each of those sessions, there's very specific information that's required. And I know you've been a BACB mm-hmm. for quite some time, so I hope yes. you don't take this as me preaching at you. but each supervision encounter that you had with her, do we have the start time, the end time, the activity, the category, whether it was restricted or unrestricted? Do we have that information? I'm just, you know, we're seeing a lot of things come from the complainant. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering if there's some documentation surrounding how you responded to those situations.
So all of the supervision that was done has been recorded in at least two different places. It's been recorded in my personal supervision log as to when they started, when they stopped, all of that different stuff, as well as utilizing Ripley to record all of that and documentation in there as to what was discussed or what was done during that time. It may not get into that specific. And maybe that's on me to make sure I'm being a little bit more specific with some of those things. But they are recorded, they are documented in multiple ways.
Are there further questions? Dr. Byra?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm just wanting to go back to some of the overarching complaint that went kind of along with three clients. And I think it kind of goes to, you know, kind of collaboration of care, right? We have JS who may have a comorbid condition. We had AY who maybe had some additional medical comorbidities with that pain issue. And then also with DS, with the SLP collaboration. So could you give me kind of a high level overview of just what's your policy and procedure surrounding collaboration of care, of how you get all of those relationships organized at your organization with other providers?
Absolutely. So at the onset of services, I speak with all of the parents or whoever is the guardian of that person to see what service they are currently engaged with. If they are engaged with some type of services outside, whether it be a psychiatrist or occupational therapy or physical therapy or speech, I will ask them to sign a release of information so that I am able to interact with those people. Now, I have had some parents who have refused to give me those release of information. And so therefore I am unable to interact with those people. With the problem with DS, they live in Lakeside. They don't have a lot of providers that are available up there. And sometimes they have to change very quickly. When this discussion occurred, I had previously met with their previous SLP to discuss both the feeding and the speech. and they were in transition in finding a new one, which can sometimes take a long time. And I had been in contact with the parent saying, when you find a new one, please let me know so that I can get a release of information to speak to your new therapist. And we were in that process of trying to get that release of information and finding a new therapist at that point in time.
Okay. Is DS still a current client?
Yes.
Do you have an ROI for his speech right now?
Yes.
Okay. Just one more question surrounding collaboration of care. I know with AY, there was concern with some pain after eating. And then I saw in the notation that you guys were tracking that and there was only one instance. But I also then noticed looking at the other documents, I'm hoping you can shed some light on here. There's a graph labeled in the documentation. It's called like graph of, I think the file name for committee members, something like graphs for AY. From October 23rd to July 2024, there is a graph labeled possible seizure that extends from October 2023 to July 2024.
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell me a little bit more about that?
So the client is having potential absent seizures.
Okay.
And we have been in contact with mom. This is actually one of the moms that is refusing that we have any type of contact or release of information for any other provider whatsoever. So we are tracking this specifically. So mom is able to take this to the doctor and say, okay, these are the times when we've identified that there could be potential absence seizures occurring to help with being able to make a diagnosis.
Okay. Is there a crisis plan surrounding? I know they're absent right now, but do we have a crisis plan for this child if those absent seizures become active seizures?
He has not shown any. I don't have one right now. Maybe, you know, that's a great idea of something that I could put in place. There are currently absent seizures that last about 3 to 5 seconds.
Okay.
And the staff has been instructed on how to manage them and how to be able to notice if it's an absent seizure or if it's just him staring off into space, to be able to try and gain his attention. If you can't gain his attention, then engage in, you know, just kind of rubbing his sternum to kind of rouse him and see if he is able to respond at that point. But as of right now, they have not been lasting very long. And that is what specifically the doctor has requested that we follow up on tracking.
Great. Thanks for providing that clarification. Thanks, Madam Chair.
Before I see if we have any other questions from committee members, Ms. Malis, can we get a code word? I know we're a little bit over an hour. I see you've unmuted, Ms. Malis, but I can't hear you.
Madam Chair, I'll go ahead and give a code word. The first code word is pumpkin. Pumpkin.
Are there further questions for Ms. Huffman? Dr. Byra?
Sorry, I don't need to steal the floor from anyone else who has other questions. So interrupt me, committee members, if you do. And Ms. Huffman, I'm sorry to keep coming with you. There's just so much documentation in the reports, and I would be remiss if if I see things and I don't ask about it, I don't feel like Absolutely. I'm doing my due diligence otherwise. So I know one of the overarching complaints was that we're staying on unmastered, you know, tasks for a really long time. I didn't see skill graphs that looked like that. What I saw were graphs that showed kind of mastered, you know, when new targets were mastered, like that's the graphs that I saw. I didn't see kind of trial by trial data. So I can't really make any kind of determination on that. But from the mastered graphs, I do see long periods of time, months sometimes, before we see new exemplars being mastered across all three of the clients that were brought here. So I just wonder if you could maybe kind of chat about, you know, what's the process, what's the progress monitoring look like when we are seeing those really large gaps between new exemplars being added to a client's repertoire.
Right. So one of the things that I was struggling with, because we were relatively new to Skills at this point, was that Skills is supposed to give you a bell when something is potentially reaching mastery. And it took me a little while to figure out that it was not doing this consistently as it should be. And I'm going in and checking things to look at them and finding that sometimes they weren't giving me the information that I needed. The other thing that I found with this is I was leaving things in mastery, which look like they, you know, are mastered, but leaving them in maintenance to make sure that we're able to maintain things, because the way that they do their maintenance was a little difficult to figure out at first. And so keeping it in that mastered, but still keeping it in there rather than putting it in the maintenance tab, worked better for my staff and being able to make sure that they were run consistently. And until we were able to figure out kind of our flow with the new data system.
Okay. That explains why stuff was, you know, mastered and still being run, but I'm still curious about the, you know, kind of months gap between, you know, we mastered an imitative response or a listener responding or a tacting goal. Can you speak a little bit about what your process is for managing that?
Sure. So I typically try to go through and update things on a weekly basis when I go through and do those. Sometimes I know, as we probably all do, occasionally miss a certain program or something like that as we're going through. But what I can say is sometimes I would put more emphasis on things like different goals, like communication goals for certain clients at certain times, depending on where we are at in their treatment. So I might pause certain things and not put a new goal in because I am focusing on communication, or I'm focusing on something that I feel is going to be more important for the specific client to be able to continue to move forward, or looking at prerequisite skills that were unmet that made that target specifically challenging so we could master those prior to moving forward with that program, because I was seeing that it was a difficult thing for them to do.
Okay, thanks very much. Appreciate that.
Dr. Davey, do you have additional questions?
Mine's more of a statement, I'm done with questions. Thank you.
Are there any further questions for Ms. Huffman? Okay. Before we move to any deliberations and discussion, FCB, would you still like to make a comment? Okay. We will now move into
deliberations.
Madam Chair, I'd like to just ask one more question. And I'm going to refer this question to SS. So SS, just a clarification on your training there. It appears, at least from Ms. Huffman's point of view, that there was no issues. And you didn't indicate this in your documents or in the statement, but the statement that she made regarding her perception that you were not unhappy or that you were okay with the supervision and didn't state anything, would you characterize that, at least from what was observable to Ms. Huffman, as being accurate?
Sure. So I try to be very professional, and I do like Miss Huffman a lot as an individual. I did take the time to ask the questions when I felt like I didn't know things or I needed clarification. But as anybody coming into a brand new field, you don't know what you don't know. And the further I got into the training, especially with my schooling, once I started the ethics class and just understanding how interventions should be run, when they should be mastered out, how to progress the client through different programs, the more I realized things were not being run appropriately. And so this is absolutely nothing personal, but while leaving, it was more so my eyes are getting open to things that are not happening the way that they should. I do know that, you know, a portion of what's happened is because, you know, they were understaffed. And if she had, you know, more, you know, a second BCBA there or more or something, then maybe she could have done things a bit differently. But the fact is, there were things that weren't done that should have been, and it's nothing personal, but the more I learned, the more I realized things just were not done ethically. They were not serving the clients, and it was not okay what was happening.
All right. Thank you. Madam Chair, I don't have any further questions.
Have any other questions arisen from committee members? The committee will now begin their deliberation. Please note that deliberation is a time for committee members to deliberate the case amongst themselves without interruptions from complainants, licensees, or attorneys representing licensees. Dr. Stenhoff, will you please begin the deliberations?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. You know, so obviously there were some issues related to at least some unhappiness, and with the supervision became more apparent, as we just heard. I have concerns about some of the documentation, more or less related to the training procedures that occurred, like the safety care training and so on. However, I also seen the documentation to an extent, and you know, and Ms. Denton, you raised the question about the start and end times with the supervision and all that, and I think that's well taken, or it's a good point. So at this time, I see some possible issues in regard to maybe the supervision, but I think a lot of the allegations I'm not sure that we can exactly document or pinpoint exactly that, oh yes, that's a problem, or that's a, or this was a problem, and I'm not very confident in the documentation that we have that would exemplify those issues, meaning we're kind of, I think, to an extent, not completely, but you know, we have information on both sides, but we don't have the information that would state that there was something that rises to the occasion of where a complaint or a recommendation to the board for any disciplinary action to occur. And so right now that's kind of where I'm at.
Yeah, this in terms of discussion, like there's definitely not, in my opinion, there's not enough here that rises to a statute violation. Hard stop. Are there things in here that perhaps the agency and the licensee could do better? Yes, I think that could be said for all of us in our practices. And so I'm very uncomfortable. Given the documentation, given what was provided to us, given the information, it may not be in the fashion that I would put it in there, but I was able to follow it and understand what was going on. I did, Dr. Byra brought the good point of kind of like the stalling and maintenance stuff, but I can also see where that is sometimes not the most critical issue if you're dealing with a significant problem behavior, is you're not maybe looking at general skill acquisition protocols as often as you should be because you're highly focused on something that is a danger to themselves or to others. I also think that this is a this is one of those situations where you have staff that's underneath you as a BCBA that may not be privy to everything that's going on, and nor should they be privy to everything that's going on. You as a BCBA have certain obligations and certain parts of your job that you are completely and fully responsible for, and that you are not only accountable and responsible for, but you are held not only by this board, but by our national body to be in tune with. And those are not always overt in terms of actions to those that we're supervising. And I can fully understand where someone who's going from an RBT and is starting to be trained in behavior analytic procedure has questions around that and you know wants to learn more about that, but may not be seeing it for a variety of reasons. And so I have a, you know, I can appreciate that and would encourage those that are listening that, you know, maybe RBT is going up to encourage them to have conversations with their BCBAs, you know, perhaps not in, you know, on the floor and maybe, you know, in supervision or after hours about what it's like, you know, the kinds of things, the kinds of contingencies that are put on place of licensees and those that oversee cases, you know, that may not be readily accessible to our trainees. And so I, you know, I think at this point, that's kind of where I stand. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Dr. Byra.
You know, Dr. Davey, to your point, like, could we all do better? Yes. Everyone, right? Everyone on this call, our staff members included, our community members included. My concern is, things came to us with, you know, certain complaints, right? There were certain complaints with JS specifically with the hallucinations. There were specific complaints with AUI and DS. But when we get all that documentation, as I mentioned earlier to Ms. Huffman, like I can't not look at all the things in front of me, right? And so I am a bit concerned with, I think, the lack of urgency to address certain things. So going back to JS and the hallucinations, we started tracking that data. I have to look back in my notes, but we started looking at data in November of 2023. We start taking data. We did get an evaluation done on 1/31/24, but not by a psychiatrist. And now it's 10/25 and that client has still not been seen. And again, I realize that we have limitations of what we can make parents do. But if we're now saying, hey, now we might be at a point that maybe we're not the best rendering service provider, like the latency to arrive at that decision seems very long to me. And I'm just curious, what's the policy? What decision making tools are we using to say, hey, actually, it's gotten bad enough that we need to refer out? And if I go through, I know the complaint was with how long things were mastered and new things weren't added. I know that was the original complaint. But if I look at challenging behavior graphs for those three clients, and they all have them, I'm seeing very long times of problem behavior being still at really high levels or even increasing. And I'm not seeing behavior change phase lines of, I started this intervention, I changed, I'm, you know, something happened, I'm documenting there's medication changes, or I'm trying this strategy now. And again, it is the lack of that is because I have 14 clients across two clinics. I don't know. Are we using candidates in those positions that are not quite ready? I don't know. I feel like there's a lot of I don't knows here, even though I've spent a considerable amount of time, unfortunately, grilling Ms. Huffman, and I apologize for the nature of the questioning, but these are questions that I'm having and I'm concerned with. Again, I know some of those were not the original complaint from SS, but I'd be remiss if I didn't express my concerns that there are things that I'm not seeing as great clinical practice here. Go ahead, Madam Chair.
I think what I would say kind of piggybacks a little bit off of you, Dr. Byra. My largest concern here is documentation. We are in a position where there are a lot of things that cannot be proven or not proven. We have a lot of questions. Whenever we look through all of the documentation that is provided, I'm concerned about documentation of supervision practices, of information that was discussed. I'm concerned about lack of documentation of coordination of care. As we are going through, Dr. Byra, as you mentioned, interventions that have been attempted or modifications that have been made when we look through these. So, you know, in terms of deliberation here, I don't know if like the Ripley tracker that was discussed would have some information about these topics. I would presume not, since you would have some PHI as we are pertaining to some of the concerns that were brought up by the complainant whenever it comes to, you know, targets going on and on and on. Or the complaints about coordinating care or talking to SLPs or utilizing the picture exchange communication system and how you utilize the picture exchange communication system, Ascent. You know, I looked at topics in the supervision document that was provided by the respondent, and it was kind of a Word document that says, hey, here are the supervision topics that I discussed. But I don't know when they were discussed. I don't know if it was timely given the supervisees' concerns that they were having, that they say they were bringing forth. So I honestly don't know if I have concerns about supervision practices, because I don't know enough about what was happening. And I think that comes back to documentation of the practices by the licensee, whether that is coordination care or whether that is supervision to a behavior analysis trainee, I do see, and I think that it is important to note that there has been some continuing education that the licensee has engaged in for supervision practices, including individual supervision and group supervision, some of it coming from the BACB, coming from I could look through some other areas, but there have been multiple things that recently have multiple CEUs that recently have been engaged in to try and improve in these areas. So I think that's my concern. I don't know that I am ready to completely dismiss the complaint. I think we have some concerns here. I'm open to more conversation with committee members, though.
Madam Chair, I'm happy to briefly share my thoughts as well. I think I'm in alignment with Dr. Davey and Dr. Stenhoff in that there are definitely some areas where you could see improvement. And as we've all said, I think that can be said for all of us. I'm not sure that I see enough that would lead me to formal action. I think that the individual did share with us how they were doing case coordination. There's clearly in treatment reports that families had been notified of the various things that we've discussed today. There were attempts made. I certainly agree it could have been more expeditious in some of these spaces. I do think that the individual was making attempts to case coordinate as best that they could. And certainly documentation could be better. But I do think that similar to Dr. Davey and Dr. Stenhoff, I'm not sure I see it rise to that level.
I am kind of thinking.
I would also, I'm sorry if I can add one more thing. I think the other somewhat concern I have as well, I absolutely appreciate that the complainant, you know, asked a lot of questions, but I would just say, for everyone listening too, if you get to a point where things do rise to a larger concern, it is appropriate to bring that concern to the individual. And so when that when that concern increased for the complainant, I would suggest in the future that that be a discussion. As you are learning more, as you are understanding more, and you become concerned with the answers that you're getting or the circumstances that you're encountering, it is absolutely appropriate to share that. I am more concerned. I do think the delays are too long. I feel we need to push a little bit further on getting another referral, whatever the case may be. I just think it is absolutely appropriate to share that with your supervisor as those things come up so that you can have that coordinated conversation. And I didn't want to forget to share that as well.
So I'm thinking here, and I'm, you know, we have concerns. Historically, when we have concerns, instead of moving in the direction of disciplinary action, there has been a letter of concern. Ms. Pakkinen?
Yes, Madam Chair. Would you do you think the committee would benefit from just sort of a summary about the two non-disciplinary options that the committee can recommend to the board?
I would appreciate that.
Thank you. So you identified one of them, which is a letter of concern. A letter of concern is a public document, but it is non-disciplinary, and its purpose is to advise a licensee that, conduct or behavior rises to enough of a level of concern that it needs to be memorialized. And while it isn't associated with any violation of statute, if it were to perpetuate or in different circumstances, different cases and so forth, that may result in a different outcome. In other words, a finding of a violation. So it's a cautionary document to advise a licensee to modify whatever it is that the conduct consisted of. So it does need to be, pretty explicit and comprehensive when it is prepared. If the committee believes that a certain course of corrective action is necessary or warranted, the committee does have the option, the board has the option to issue a non-disciplinary continuing education order. And so that would, specifically indicate this is what we need the licensee to complete successfully in order to cure, remediate, or resolve the issues and concerns that we identified. So they can be issued independent of one another, and they can also be issued together.
For clarification, Ms. Pakkinen, both are reportable in public?
They are public documents. They are not posted on the website, but they are in the licensee's file.
And they are a finding that the licensee would then have to disclose with every single funder going forward in terms of credentialing?
It depends on the question the funder proposes, how the question is posed by the funder. If the question is, has any public action been taken? The answer is probably yes. Has any disciplinary action been taken? A letter of concern, non-disciplinary continuing education order, those are not disciplinary actions.
Our own question and our application, right, is, have you been investigated? The answer to that would be yes, right?
Correct, Dr. Davy. I don't have the question in front of me, but as I recall, it is very broadly framed so as to encompass, any type of investigation and, scenario in terms of an outcome.
Again, I'll just reiterate, I mean, I'm not discounting what Dr. Byra and Ms. Din are saying, but I have a hard time coming in after the fact and putting this licensee in a position of us playing, you know, armchair quarterback and looking at documentation saying, hey, you know, you could have done a better job. And what I'm hearing is this individual has done a good job. This individual was doing a good job while SS was working with them, that this all comes after the fact. And I personally have a hard time coming in. Like, it would be one thing if this is all going on while in supervision, documentation of, hey, I have concerns, SS following her ethical obligation to document those concerns in these conversations as part of her due diligence as an RBT. None of that exists. And so I have a hard time putting a licensee who, from the documentation I can see, is doing what she's supposed to be doing in terms of capturing information. Is it, you know, is there times where there might be a delay in moving a protocol from another? Yes, I see that, but I don't know that that's worth putting in a non-disciplinary action. Definitely not a disciplinary action. So that is still where I stand. And I'll go ahead and make a motion. I'll call a question. So I make the motion that we dismiss this as none of this rises to a level of a statute violation.
Second.
The motion has been made by Dr. Davey to dismiss complaint number 24-40 against Jennifer Huffman. It has been seconded by Dr. Stenhoff. Is there any discussion? We will now move to a vote. All in favor, say aye.
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 All opposed, nay. I will say nay.
I'm not going to vote, Madam Chair. I'm abstaining from voting.
The motion does carry with Dr. Stenhoff, Dr. Davey, and Dr. Rates. This information should be noted that it is a committee review. The complaint number 24-40 against Jennifer Huffman has been referred to the board with the recommendation to dismiss. Thank you for all who participated in the complaint review process today. The complainant and the licensee will be notified by board staff in writing of the date when the board will review the committee's recommendation once that date has been determined. At this time, before we move forward to the next agenda item, I would like to provide staff with board staff and attendees and committee members with a comfort break if we can return at 11:25. Sometimes we come back with our videos off. Dr. Davey, Dr. Byra, have you returned? Well, it's a little bit longer. Miss Malice, it's not 11:30 yet. I was going to get to the code word when everybody came back, but go for it.
Sorry, Madam Chair. The next code word is ghosts. Thank you.
Looks like all committee members have returned. What I would like to do next is kind of hop a little bit so that we can ensure that the agenda item can be covered. So we will come back to agenda item number 5B. Right now, we're going to move to agenda item number 6, which is discussion, consideration, and possible action regarding recommendation to the board pertaining to approval of behavior analyst applicants. Dr. Reitz, I am aware that you need to exit this meeting in about 30 minutes, so I would like to ensure that you have the opportunity to review your applications. So the applications that you have are applicant number 5, 6, 7, and 8, which is Margaret Connors, Flor Brisso, Rochelle Vincent, and Stephanie Horgan.
Madam Chair, and I appreciate the accommodation for today. I am very pleased to say that for all four of the applicants that I reviewed, my review of the files, including education, supervision, examination performance, found them all to be both substantively and administratively complete. And I would recommend that all four be moved forward.
That was snappy. All right. What we will do now, just so we can have as many committee members as possible on this, is move to agenda item number 5B. Agenda item number 5B is complaint number 24-44. We're going to have to go back to the renewal application for Jennifer Huffman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. That's what I was trying to alert, and I couldn't find the raise the hand button.
Okay, here we go. So we will go through the second piece of this. Dr. Stenhoff, you are the lead on this. Will you proceed through the renewal application review for Jennifer?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. With my review, Ms. Huffman included everything that was necessary to continue her her license, so I don't see any issues. And so my review of the file, including applicant's information that she included, that I found it both administratively and substantively complete, and recommend it move forward to the board for continued approval for the renewal.
Is there a second?
A second, and then also just comment that she did, on her attestations, did properly attest to the fact that there had been the complaint filed against her.
Okay. Thank you,
Dr. Has been made to recommend to the board the approval of the renewal application for Jennifer Huffman. It has been seconded by Dr. Davey. Is there any discussion? Okay. All in favor say aye.
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 Did everyone get theirs in? I don't know. Okay. All right. All opposed, nay. The motion carries. Okay. Now we're going to move to agenda item number 5B, which is complaint number 24-44 and 25-01 against Courtney Peters. Dr. Davey is the lead on this agenda item. I am recused from this agenda item and will be removing myself from the meeting. Dr. Davey, since you are the lead on the agenda, I am hoping that you will assume chair for the duration of this complaint review.
It'd be my pleasure, Madam Chair.
Okay.
All right. Thank you very much. So as Madam Chair alluded to, this is item number 5B, complaint number 2444 and 2501, pertaining to licensee Courtney Peters. I'll do a quick review of the two complaints, and then we'll go ahead and see if there's any questions, and then we'll move forward to statements. As a way of a quick review, there are two complaints. Both complaints really hit on the same issues. In fact, if you read through the complaints, some of the same language is used, some of the same comments were used, some of the same kind of verbiage. And I would say that there are some just questionable overlaps in terms of the reviews as you look at them. The first review comes from a parent. First complaint comes from a parent. Second one comes from an RBT, who I will note the RBT's expiration is no longer an RBT, and their certification expired in 1/5 of 2023. This includes an individual who was parent reports that they were going to terminate services for their child, that they were moving. As such, the RBT that also submitted the complaint shortly, like within a week, also resigned. And as you will see through the complaint process, the RBT really only worked with this particular client. And in fact, according to some of the information provided, was only willing to work with this particular client. There are claims that there was HIPAA violations by the use of Google Docs and Google Chat. However, in response, both the agency and the BC or the licensee in question note that they have a business agreement, a business associate agreement in place with HIPAA or with Google, which then covers them for HIPAA. There are questions around billing practices, questions around supervision, questions around how invoices were provided. A lot of this has to do with information with regard to the finalizing of a bill once services were ending. Finally, I'll just say that in the review, there was some discussion of unethical practices with regard to supervision by the BCBA. And that there was a rebuttal to that in the licensee's response. There was also a lot of misinformation that was provided in the RBT complaint with regard to what position she actually held, who were the owners and who were the operators and who were the BCBAs of the agency and their relationships. And so while there were some claims of dual relationships or perhaps some issues related to those two relationships, I think that those are unfounded and then responded to in the complaint. That is my summary for the team. Any questions from my fellow committee members? All right, hearing none, as Chair, I'll continue to move us on. The complainants, FC, the complaint for 2444 FC, if you are present, can you please unmute yourself and alert us or have that you are here? And I believe we had been informed by to board staff that she was not going to be, FC was not going to be attending today. So that appears to be the case. If I'm wrong, please speak up at any time. For complaint 2501, complainant AM, are you present? Okay, I believe we also had indication that this individual would also not be present today. With that, we will move to our licensee. Ms. Peters, I can see you on my screen, so I know you are present. Would you like to, you or your lawyer, your legal representation, like to make a statement at this time, and I will do my due diligence asking you both to please introduce yourselves with your full legal names.
Hi, I'm Heather Macri, and I am the attorney for Courtney Peters, and I'm going to let Ms. Peters I'm going to let Ms. Peters introduce herself.
Hello, I am Courtney Peters.
Very good. So up to five minutes, if you don't mind, on your response, and we'll go from there. Thank you.
Absolutely. I appreciate it. And I just want to thank all of you today for giving us time to respond to this spurious complaint. Ms. Peters has been licensed in the state of Arizona since 2015 and has absolutely no disciplinary history. She is an exemplary professional. This is a case of a client, FC, the mother, who was caught in multiple lies, had an outstanding bill that she still has not paid. And despite 2 years of excellent service in which she constantly was complimentary and even brought cookies and things like that to my client's agency, when she was confronted with her lies, decided to file this complaint and then get her family friend, the RBT, to file a second complaint that reads with the exact same language. This, quite frankly, is a frame job. We have presented over 2,000 pages of documentation to refute all 14 of the spurious allegations made in this complaint. So let me give you a little background here. FC, the original complainant, brought her son to Ms. Peters and her agency in April of 2022, and she received services through June of 2024. During that 2+ year period, everything was great. In fact, we've sent several complimentary emails in the file showing that everyone was happy, the child was thriving, everything was going well. Though throughout that time, it should be noted that FC was never exactly the perfect parent. She constantly pulled the child out of different services, changed tutoring, despite being told that these types of abrupt changes were not great for the child. However, Ms. Peters and the agency did everything they could to smooth these changes over, to take care of this child, and to make sure that he was meeting and exceeding his goals. Again, everything was going great until June 8th, when FC sends an email saying that her family was moving to Michigan. On 6:14 a.m., the other complainant resigned, saying that since she only worked with this family, and she in fact refused to work with other families, that she had no reason to continue working with Into the Spectrum. On 6:19, Ms. Peters decided that she should have a visit with Elsie's tutor. This was because services were being terminated, and she felt it was her job to make sure that this transition was smoothed over. She called Lauren Weber, the tutor, told Ms. Weber that she was coming, came to Ms. Weber. She brought flowers. She and Ms. Weber had a very pleasant exchange. However, in this exchange, which took place before AM and the child were present, she found out from Ms. Weber that in fact the family was not moving to Michigan, that they were continuing services. She found out and she caught FC in a lie. This concerned her. At this point in time, AM and the child show up, and she finds out from AM that the child had been taken off of his medications. There was no reason from the prescriber that had been given for this. And again, everyone was a little concerned that now mom had lied about moving and mom had removed the child from medication with no reason given from the prescriber. Despite this, all of the adults go through with the tutoring session. And by all accounts of the people who were actually there, the tutoring session went along as normal. We have an email from Lauren Weber, the tutor, saying that everything went as normal. We have the contemporaneous notes from AM. And if you look at the notes from this session compared to every other tutoring session notes, the notes are completely consistent. This tutoring session was just like the others. Yes, the child sometimes was disruptive. He was consistently disruptive in tutoring sessions. This is often what happens with a child with this type of behavior. We also have Ms. Peters' declaration, which is signed under oath, which again says this was a very normal tutoring session. Everyone goes home thinking everything's fine. The next day, FC sends a very angry email to my client, Into the Spectrum, saying, hey, what happened? Into the Spectrum is totally surprised. They bring up the fact that it was totally fine for Ms. Peters to be there, that she had talked to everyone in advance, including the fact that she even told AM that she was going to be at the tutoring session in advance of the tutoring session. And at this point, they mentioned the fact that mom had a balance due. Mom denied that she had a balance due. Well, they look at the QuickBooks, and the QuickBooks show that mom had actually viewed the balance 27 times. And we have documentation of that, and we have presented it to you in the records. At this time, mom also asks for a copy of the behavioral analysis profile. That is produced in less than 30 days. And they tell mom, hey, we can get that together for you. It's not quite due, but we'll get it for you. This happens in June. That is produced on July 3rd by the company's business lawyer, Stephen Dichter. And again, that's in your file. Despite all of this, mom turns around and files a complaint, then files a supplemental complaint, then gets AM to file the exact same complaint. And I will tell you, again, we have 2,000 pages of information that back up our version of events. Mom has nothing. Anahi Maya has nothing. Most of these
AM said she has a complaint, please.
Sure. AM has nothing. So let's look at these allegations. The first one is about documentation and reporting. My client prepared documents every 6 months as requested. And in fact, FC or her husband often signed off on these reports. And again, that is in the file. There were no issues with any reporting until 2 years later. 2 years into this relationship, when all of a sudden she's angry because she's been caught in a lie and her balance was due. That information was provided within the 30 days two times, first by Stephen Dichter and then again by myself. Both times, FC said that she got those reports. The second allegation is that there was unprofessional conduct. No date is given for this alleged unprofessional conduct, so we have to assume that it was the June 19th visit with Lauren Weber. And again, if we look back, all of the testimony from anyone who was actually there does not show any signs of unprofessional conduct. Number three, inadequate supervision. If we look at the records, all of the supervision requirements say that there needs to be at least a 5% rate of supervision. Our records, which have been produced, show a 10% rate of supervision. In other words, more than double. We also have records, showing that Ms. Peters met with AM on March 19th and had a 1.5-hour meeting concerning this child. We also know that Ms. Peters and AM were in almost constant contact, so AM had the opportunity to ask questions at almost any time. So did Mom. No questions were asked. We also have an allegation that there was a retaliation against another employee. That employee isn't named. No example of retaliation is given. Again, we believe this might have been one of AM's friends, but we have information in the file showing that she was in fact terminated. She was terminated for missing 16 out of her first 90 days. And again, we have that documented. Data management, which Mr. Davey mentioned, that was the HIPAA issue. Yes, absolutely. Ms. Peters and her organization do use Google Workspace. In fact, I believe your organization uses Google Workspace. We use the HIPAA compliant version and we have a business associates agreement which has been produced. Conflict of interest. And again, that one's pretty nebulous, but as we explained in the response, there is no conflict of interest here. The relationships as they were described in the complaint are completely false and misleading. Once again, we have FC manipulating the facts that are completely untrue. Threats. FC indicated that threats were made against her, though she never actually states what those threats are. However, I will point out that Courtney Peters and other folks at ISS are mandatory reporters. They were certainly concerned when they learned that the family was moving and discontinuing services. When they asked questions about what services were being set up in Michigan, they were not given answers. And so they were concerned that the child was discontinuing services with no services being set up on the other side. These concerns were heightened when they learned that the child had been taken off medication for no reason, and then especially when they learned that the family might not be moving to Michigan. When they made further inquiry, and there were no threats made, they simply made further inquiry, they weren't given any answers. They were allowed to ask these questions. These are not threats. These are simply the questions that a responder needs to know. And I'm going through these quickly because there are so many. We're happy to answer more questions.
Yeah, I think you can pause there.
Okay.
Your points are well taken, and I appreciate them. Thank you very much. And so I think what we'll do instead is if there's any questions from the committee.
Sure.
Since we can't question or ask questions of the complainants, I think we'll target our questions towards you and let you respond to those. And if there's ones that you would like to elaborate on that we haven't had a chance to quite get to in your statement or Ms. Peters' statement, then that would be completely allowable. So right now, committee members, I'll open it up to the floor for any additional questions we have for Ms. Peters and her legal representation. Yeah, I don't have any further questions. I have gone through the documentation and this appears to be an invalid complaint, in my opinion. And so if there's no other questions, I'm going to take that as a signal from this committee to go ahead and just move to dismiss this complaint on the grounds that there is nothing here that raises to an issue of a statute violation and in fact appears to be somewhat vindictive in its filing.
Second.
Dr. Davey, just to clarify, your motion is a recommendation to the board to dismiss both complaints.
Yes.
Thank you.
Yes. I forget I've got
with that revised motion, second as well.
Very good. We have a first and a second to send this to the full board for dismissal. Any further discussion?
Just real quick, Dr. Davey, I just wanted to thank Ms. Peters for the very detailed documentation. It does make our lives so much easier when everything comes quickly and organized. And so sorry you're going through it, but thank you for being organized in your delivery.
Thank you very much. And thank you so much for your time to have to go through it as well.
Very good. Any further discussion from board members? All right. Hearing none, all in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Very good. Motion carries unanimously. Thank you very much, Ms. Peters, and your legal representation. I also would just like to voice our gratitude for you taking the time to respond to this complaint. I know that it was probably stressful to go through this, have to engage legal counsel to go through this, and I Thank you again. And I'll reserve the rest of my complaints and wish we had other ways to work through this, but we'll stop there. Thank you very much. And with that, I guess I can, we can request that Ms. Denton return back and resume her chairwomanship.
I have requested her to rejoin, and she indicates she'll be here in a moment. And just to add one last piece, for those pending complaints, staff will follow up with the parties regarding when this will be reviewed by the board. So I'll get with them later today. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Right. I am resuming my chairwomanship, so you say.
Yes.
We will then move on to agenda item number 6. We will resume this agenda item. So we'll just go ahead and start agenda item number 6 for those in attendance. As a reminder, is discussion, consideration, and possible action regarding recommendations to the board pertaining to the approval of behavior analyst applicants. Dr. Davey, you have applicants number 1, 2, 3, and 4, which is Emma Helvig, Kelsey Goodner, Maria Eleonora Veneri, Rayosha Huffman. I do note, just as a point of disclosure, I used to be a supervisor for Kelsey Goodner. She has not listed me on her RB or on her supervision forms. Our supervision experience was brief and several years ago. I do feel as though I can move forward with the application review in an unbiased fashion. Dr. Stenhoff?
Yeah, Madam Chair, thank you. I just need to note, I was a professor of Emma Helvig's, as an applicant under Dr. Davies. And then I also want to know, just moving forward with Scott Fitch as well. I was also his professor while he was in school, but I feel I can review the applications without bias.
Are there any other disclosures or recusals? Okay, take it away, Dr. Davies.
Very good, Madam Chair. I will make this short and sweet. I'm pleased to announce that my review of the 4 applicants that you've already named, that the review of their file, including their education, supervised experience, examination, performance, and declaration, I find this to be both administratively and substantially complete, and would like to see these move forward to the full board for the applicants to receive their license to practice in the state of Arizona.
Thank you. Dr. Byra, we will have you move next. You have applicants number 9, 10, 11, and 12, which is Ashley Dahl, Christopher, Surveils is my guess, Sylvia Kaharia. I am doing a great job, guys. Elizabeth Huckerin. Dr. Byra, over to you.
Thanks for that. I'm going to do even worse. Are we doing our clean list first, or are we doing if there's an issue first? I can't remember. We decided for order. Sorry.
You know, I think it's dealer's choice.
Okay, cool. I only have one issue, and it's just administrative. So I'm hoping my colleagues can help me here with getting this sorted. But it's for applicant number 12, Elizabeth Puckerin. In the application on page 2, she says that she was issued her BACB on 8/1/23, but in the screenshot of the BCBA documentation, it says it was issued May 20th, 2024. I'm hoping we just typed wrong numbers in the wrong box. Everything else was in order, so I'm hoping if we just get that sorted, we can move it through.
I feel comfortable with that.
Okay. I'm not sure if she's on the call. I'm not sure the steps that need to go in to get that rectified, but that was the only issue there. And then I'm happy to say the applicant 9, 10, and 11, I find those to be their applications, including their education, supervised experience, examination, performance, and declaration, to be administratively and substantively complete, and I'd like to recommend they go to the board for full approval.
I will go through the next one. So I have applicants number 14, 15, 16, and 17. I have Anjali Piala, Melissa Jensen, Bridget Coronado, and Kayla Grant. As I go through these, my clean list that I have is for Anna E., applicant Anali. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. Applicant number 14. Applicant number 16, Brigitte Coronado. And applicant number 17, Kayla Grant. I find all of these applications in my review of their files, including their education, supervised experience, examination performance, and declarations, to be both administratively and substantively complete, and would like to see that they move forward to the full board for approval. I also have applicant number 13. So applicant number 13 is Yennefer Robles Aguirre. This application just has a couple of typographical things that need to be corrected, but they are not substantive review matters. So I would recommend that it moves forward. The areas that need to be corrected there are discrepancies between the dates of supervision from supervisors. I know board staff attempted to reach out and did not receive a response on this. Either way, it's a couple of days in between both things. It does not affect if she met the 1500 hours. It does not affect if she completed her graduate degree. So I would recommend that it moves forward to the full board for approval with some corrections coming just for accuracy. Okay. There is an application that I need to issue a fare for. Applicant number 15, Melissa Jensen. This applicant received her supervised experience in Utah. Utah is a licensure state. There were many supervisors that were listed. However, on the form that we have that is supplied to us, the supervised experience requirements form, this applicant doesn't specify the number of hours per supervisor. And the reason this is really relevant here is there is one supervisor that provided supervision from August 25th of 2017 until March 29th of 2018, when they were not yet licensed in Utah. And for those who are on the call, Arizona state statute requires that supervision occurs under a licensed supervisor if licensure is required in your state, in order for those hours to count towards the 1500 hour statutory requirement. So at this point, I do not know for those 7 months how many hours were provided. There was a total of 1604. 1,604 hours that were completed, depending on how many hours were provided by Krista Hayes during the time that she was not licensed, would determine if she met that 1,500 hours. So what I would propose is that we issue a first additional information request to get the monthly experience verification forms from Ms. Hayes. I don't need them from everyone, and potentially the supervision tracker that shows the dates between August 25th of 2017 and March 29th of 2018, just to ensure that all of the hours were supervised by someone who was licensed. And those are my applicants. Okay, we will move on to applicants number 18, 19, 20, and 21. These are yours, Dr. Stenhoff. You have Scott Fitch, Andrew Wegman, Daniel Bolera, and Cammie Williams.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So my review of the files, including the applicant's education, supervised experience, examination, performance, and declarations, I find M to be both administratively and substantively complete, and recommend all applications be forwarded to the board for approval. Well, Madam Chair, I believe you're muted.
I sure was. All right. For agenda item number 6A, is there a motion?
I'll move that all of those, with the exception, I believe, of your fare request, be moved forward to the full board for consideration for their license.
Second.
The motion has been made by Dr. Davey. It has been seconded by Dr. Stenhoff. Is there any discussion? All in favor, say aye.
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 Aye. Sorry.
Okay. The motion carries. We have agenda item number 6B and 6C, which are behavior analyst applications for licensure by universal recognition. We have no applicants under this pathway to licensure during this meeting. Additionally, is the same situation for requesting approval for telehealth registration. We have no one seeking telehealth registration at this time, which means we can successfully move to agenda item number 7. Agenda item number 7 is discussion, consideration, and possible action regarding recent updates from the Behavior Analyst Certification Board. Ms. Pakkinen, it's your time to shine. Would you give us an update?
That's quite the exaggeration, Madam Chair, but thank you. I don't have much of an update. The BACB hasn't issued any materials through regulator channels since the last time the committee met. However, I'm just providing a brief oral update or notification that during its October 4th, 2024 board meeting, the board adopted a motion to submit a nomination of Dr. Brian Davey for consideration for the BACB's Michael Hemingway Award. So that nomination has been submitted, and I believe nominees and maybe the nominators will be notified at some point in the spring. So it's a lengthy wait to learn the outcome. And that is all I have for you.
Congratulations, Dr. Davey.
Yes, let's see.
Congratulations, Dr. Davey.
Thank you all. And I'm sure there's lots of deserving people. So I just appreciate the nomination. And and it's not without all of you guys that the things I was able to do and the things that the board spoke of, I could not have done it without all of you. And that includes board staff for many of the things we've worked on in Arizona over the years. So, and that includes both past and present members of this committee and the full board.
We will move to agenda item number 8, which is new agenda items for future meetings. Do any committee members have agenda items that need to be added to future meetings?
I think the one item that's still out there is that Dr. Davis Wilson, myself, and Ms. Pakkinen are working on some models around supervision of individuals that are not fully licensed yet. And so that is just something that as we get closer to nailing that down, we'll get on an agenda. And I know Ms. Pakkinen's working on that as we speak.
Dr. Reitz, it's 12:01. And it is for agenda item number 9, which is adjournment. Is there a motion to adjourn?
I will make a motion.
Motion has been made by Dr. Reitz. Is there a second?
So moved for Dr. Reitz's sake.
Thank you.
All right. Motion has been made by Dr. Reitz to adjourn. It has been seconded by Dr. Davey. All in favor say aye.
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 All opposed, nay. The motion carries. I hope everyone has a fabulous weekend.